Welcome to God and Country Biblical. After some rioters broke into the Capitol last week at the Stop the Steal rally, there's a lot to talk about. The disinformation and the political gamesmanship is everywhere. And we need to keep our heads straight, lest we be swayed by the avalanche of media groupthink. The left, the news media, and the social media companies are using the January 6th Capitol break-in as an excuse to do what they've always wanted to do: ban political conservative ideas from the public square, shutting down the influence of the conservative right. As Dennis Prager tweeted out last week, there is no example of the left having power and not suppressing speech. It doesn't exist. Free speech is its dire enemy. So we could take the next hour and discuss what is now being called the Friday Night Massacre on January 9th, where social media companies banned a whole list of conservatives. President Trump was banned from Twitter under the excuse that he was spreading false information about the election that could result in violence. But not only was President Trump suspended from Twitter, but other conservative voices like Sidney Powell, Michael Flynn, Kevin McCullough, and many more. And there's a whole list of leftist politicians and pundits who were praising Twitter for the move. So the response was a mass exodus from Twitter by conservative voices, Rush Limbaugh, Greg Gutfeld, Mark Levin, Lou Dobbs, all closed their Twitter accounts, along with tens of thousands of Trump supporters. Twitter users were losing followers by the thousands. Parler and Gab, the free speech alternatives to Twitter and Instagram, were picking up thousands of new customers, and everyone was moving over to those platforms. So what did Apple and Google do? They removed the Parler app from their app store. Then Amazon, through Parler, offered their servers, which shut down Parler. This was illegal because Amazon servers have to give companies 30-day notice before removing a client. But Bezos didn't care. He just wanted to damage conservative media. So Parler has sued Amazon. This whole social media response by companies led by Democrat leftists is really alarming. They do not want people to go to these free speech platforms. In their leftist ideology, they believe they have a moral imperative to shut down these new conservative companies that are taking away their monopoly. You know, it's like the New York Times making a move to shut down Fox News or the Daily Wire or townhall.com. California Congressman Devin Nunes is calling for a racketeering investigation into Amazon, Apple, and Google because they conspired together to violate antitrust laws. But now that the Democrats control the White House and the Senate and the House and the judicial branch, you know, nothing really is going to come of this. So here's some other stories about the extent of this movement to ban conservative political speech, using last week's rally as an excuse. A reporter at The Blaze, Elijah Schaefer, was deplatformed from Facebook and Instagram for attending the Stop the Steal rally to report on it. And yet, Facebook and Instagram did not deplatform a leftist, John Sullivan, who also entered the Capitol claiming he was there to report on it. So these social media operators aren't just picking out inappropriate statements made on social media. They are going through lists of conservatives and deplatforming them one by one. Republican Senator Josh Hawley had his book deal canceled by the publisher Simon & Schuster just for Hawley supporting Cruz's motion to have the Senate delay voting on the electors until there can be hearings, until these claims of a fraud are investigated. And the irony is that the book was all about the tyranny of big tech and social media. A public school teacher in Allentown, Pennsylvania was suspended for just attending the rally. Why? The school district officials say they need to investigate his involvement. So even local Democrats have no conception of basic American civil rights because they have this leftist mindset of control. The executive vice president of Cumulus Media, which hosts some conservative pundits, sent out an internal memo that stated, "We will not tolerate any suggestion that the election has not ended. The election has been resolved, and there is no alternative acceptable paths. If you transgress this policy, you can expect to be separated from the company immediately." So the narrative created by the left that Biden's win must be accepted as legitimate and there is no fraud must be voiced or else. Here's another indicator of the prevailing attitude among leftist Americans. Mitchell Baker, CEO of Mozilla, wrote that they plan to go beyond deplatforming in combating what they consider harmful speech, which is their definition of conservative speech and values. Well, this going beyond just deplatforming includes going after the advertisers of conservatives, using computer algorithms to target certain people and ideas, and to shadow ban conservatives. What the left is now doing is the reversal of what a Christian government and a Christian people would do in targeting pornographers, sex traffickers, Satan worshipers, subversive communists in the public square. This is all being done because now good is being called evil and evil is being called good. Righteous censorship is now being turned into unrighteous censorship. And I hope we understand that there is a righteous and an unrighteous censorship. The standard is not relativism. You know, what we're experiencing, we knew was coming. This is the inevitable fruit of the banning of the Bible from public schools, from the courts, the result of a generation being raised on atheistic secular humanism. Human rights can only exist and be built upon a Christian foundation, a Christian worldview. They cannot be supported for very long on humanism. And a generation that will kill infants in abortion will eventually become totalitarian and communistic. This Grabian article says it well. The purge has begun. Where it stops, no one knows. Just days ahead of the inauguration of President-elect Joe Biden on January 20th, purges have begun in earnest. In the wake of the protest that turned into a riot at the U.S. Capitol building, various media and high-tech companies have used the moment not simply to condemn the violence, but to remove the president of the United States and countless other Americans from their digital platforms. It's understandable that many Americans are shaken by what they saw at the Capitol last week. It's part of a larger pattern of mob law, but the crimes of a few lawbreakers should not be used as an excuse to punish and silence other Americans simply because of their political beliefs. Those actions appear to be targeted and coordinated. It's a deeply disturbing trend, given that Biden and his fellow Democrats are less than 10 days from effectively controlling both Congresses and the executive branch. While Biden may preach unity in some of his public statements, he hasn't refrained from, for example, comparing his opponents with Nazis. And Biden did call Trump supporters and Trump Nazis. You know, as Senator Cruz tweeted, really sad. At a time of deep national division, President-elect Biden's choice to call his political opponents literal Nazis does not bring us together or promote healing. This kind of vicious partisan rhetoric only tears our country apart. So notice, this censorship is happening even before the Democrats take control of the government. And the reason is that these liberal tech companies know that the Biden administration, the new Justice Department, will do nothing to prevent the censorship of conservatives, just like the courts did nothing to investigate election fraud. So if this is what the left is doing now, what's to happen after Biden takes office? Here's a statement from Tony Perkins at the Christian Political Action Group, Family Research Council. The conservative purge has begun. All they needed was an opening. And for the rich extremists at the helm of Western social media, last Wednesday's riot gave them one. The purge of conservative expression has begun. We knew it was coming, just as we've always known it will take every one of us to stop it. Most Americans thought they understood censorship. They've watched it evolve and expand over this last decade, scooping up more people in its nets in the name of tolerance, diversity, and nonviolence. But what happened this weekend was not a tweet blocked here or an account suspended there. No, this was much more ominous. What Twitter, Facebook, Google, and Amazon did by locking out the president wasn't just a heavy-handed punishment of Donald Trump and his supporters. This was a scorched earth campaign against the tens of millions of people who dare to think differently than they do, and the open forums that give our movement a voice. So, what we're seeing here may be the new normal for the next 4 years, and likely even beyond, the persecution of conservatives, their ideas, their values, and it sure looks like what has been prophesied. The world ends with Christians being silenced and persecuted, that if you don't go along with the leftist global agenda, you're going to be canceled. Revelation chapter 13, verse 17. And he, the beast, the Antichrist and his government, provides that no one will be able to buy or sell except the one who has the mark, either the name of the beast or the number of his name. And you can be sure that this economic persecution will be preceded by a shutting down of all speech opposed to the New World Order. The ideological groundwork for the Antichrist agenda is most likely being laid in our generation. Those who oppose a leftist secular worldview, Sodom and Gomorrah morally and politically, will be called spreaders of disinformation, instigators of violence. You know, there is always an excuse to justify totalitarianism and persecution. The social leaders of this world will support the takedown of Christian political and moral values. Get ready for it. Realize how subtle it will be. And honor Christ by being willing to take a stand right now for the truth. Now, I suppose someone would say in all this, this is not the persecution of Christianity. This is simply the censoring of certain political speech. This is good people trying to stop violence. But no, this is where it starts. First, by persecuting the political application of Christian values, and then it quickly spreads to shutting down other Christian outlets, Christian periodicals, Christian colleges, churches. At some point, I need to do a program explaining how what is happening now is a sign of things to come. But for today, I want to back up and I want to discuss people's reaction to the January 6th Capitol break-in. The media is creating a certain narrative that is misrepresenting the event, and we need to understand this. Nancy Pelosi, Democrat Speaker of the House, was interviewed last Sunday in a 60 Minutes program. Leslie Stahl started the interview off with her own worldview by describing the Stop the Steal rally as a horrendous act of violence. And then she went on, for whatever reason, to claim as a fact the Russian collusion hoax. But then Pelosi went on to say that democracy was under siege, that the president is unhinged, deranged, dangerous. He has done something so serious that there should be prosecution against him, that he is under a delusion that he has won in a landslide. Quote from Pelosi, "I think it was universally accepted that what happened was a terrible, terrible violation of the Capitol, of the first branch of government, the legislative branch, by the President of the United States." And quote, "The evidence is now that it was a well-planned, organized group with leadership and guidance and direction," as if this was from Trump supporters. So this was all political posturing for the camera by the Democrats to create and spread a certain way of thinking about the event. But was it right? When statues were being taken down by BLM and Antifa activists this last summer, Nancy Pelosi was captured on camera, shrugging her shoulders, saying, "I don't care that much about statues." But when it is not her side making the protest, and the protests are against her party, then there's outrage. Then this is an attack upon democracy. In the words of Jesus, Luke chapter 7, "For John the Baptist has come, eating no bread and drinking no wine, and you say, he has a demon. The Son of Man has come eating and drinking, and you say, behold, a gluttonous man and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners. Yet wisdom is vindicated by her children." There Jesus was pointing out the inconsistency and the double standard of the political leaders of his day. A double standard that would eventually be used to justify his crucifixion. In my YouTube last week, I included a collage of all the media outlets excusing the riots last summer as peaceful demonstrators for a good cause, that this was democracy in action. And again, remember the famous quote from CNN commentator Chris Cuomo: "Now too many see the protests as the problem. No, the problem was what forced your fellow citizens to take to the street. Persistent and poisonous inequities and injustice. And please show me where it is written that protests are supposed to be polite and peaceful." You know, isn't it amazing that in the providence of God, in the 21st century, we have all of these statements caught on video, exposing the double standard of the ungodly? And this is all so that this generation, which might actually be the last generation, can see the double standard and hypocrisy. But why isn't Cuomo's opinion now being applied to the protesters at the Capitol on January 6th? Because there is ideological bias. Because there are two different worldviews concerning what constitutes righteousness and justice. Therefore, a freedom fighter becomes a terrorist if he's not part of your party. Remember the words, I think it was of Mark Twain, or was it Will Rogers? "There is nothing more base than those who wait to discover what party someone belongs to before they judge the goodness or the evil of their actions." Now, a typical response would be that the violence on both sides were horrendous. The riots last summer and the riots at the Capitol last week. Yes, but there are some factors that are conveniently being ignored by the media. First, Donald Trump did not in any way encourage these Capitol break-ins just because he was standing up for a fair and democratic election. One has to have an a priori belief that the evidence of fraud in this election is one big hoax. Only then are the president's actions unjust. As Nancy Pelosi claimed, he is under the delusion he has won in a landslide. But if there was cheating in this election, then the president's challenging of the election and the people rallying around the president to stop this fraud would be the epitome of American patriotism. The January 6th Capitol event would go down in history as a 1776 event. And if the shoe was on the other foot and the Democrats lost, and there was all sorts of evidence of election fraud, You know that the Democrats and the media would be characterizing the Stop the Steal rally as true democracy, patriotism, the only way to save the nation. But the media has done such an extensive job of creating the narrative in the minds of the American people that there is nothing to see here in these claims of election fraud, that the American people are swayed to view the Capitol protests as a horrible, undemocratic event. But it all depends on one's prior knowledge and beliefs concerning the facts. The whole point in Ted Cruz's objection to the certifying of the electors was that Congress would first conduct some hearings in regard to evidence of election fraud to satisfy the questions of the American voters. And you would think Democrats would be all for that, because if the evidence was false, then this would be a great way for Democrats to further discredit the president and the political right. This would strengthen the legitimacy of Biden, and this would end much of this suspicion about election fraud. Why wouldn't the Democrats want this? Yet, they went and depicted Ted Cruz's request for an investigation as overturning the Constitution, as delegitimizing democracy. From the LA Times, Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley are torching the Constitution to further their own presidential ambitions. 75 million Americans voted for Donald Trump, the largest number of presidential votes in the history of the United States, by at least 6 to 7 million. And do the Democrats expect to lead this country with 75 million Americans thinking that this election was stolen? That is political suicide for the Democrats. But they wouldn't allow the hearings. What are they afraid of? What news are they trying to bury? It's no wonder Americans were storming the Capitol. It could be said, and it has been said, that the Democrats started the riots by refusing to hold hearings given the fact that there are serious evidences of election fraud. Over 1,000 affidavits of fraud. Well, a second factor that must be considered in judging these Capitol riots and the break-in, it's now coming out that the break-ins were instigated by Antifa and leftist supporters. New York Post headlines, two known Antifa members posing as pro-Trump infiltrated Capitol riot. And pictures were taken of leftists in the Capitol building. And as I mentioned on my YouTube last week, I saw an Antifa member standing on an American flag in order to provoke a fight with Trump supporters. John Sullivan was caught on film in the Capitol. He is a BLM activist who called for a revolution and to rip Trump out of office. So what is he doing there? And the report that a Trump supporter killed a Capitol police officer by hitting him over the head with a fire extinguisher is now being reported as untrue. Yet it was reported that way by all the media. This Capitol police officer apparently had medical issues and may have died from stress, just like some other Trump supporters at the rally. Now, yes, there were some Trump supporters who decided to enter the building. But some of them were QAnon conspiracy theorist people, not mainstream Trump supporters. And some of them who went into the rotunda did so because once the barriers were broken down, the police were letting people through. And they were thinking that this was simply a way to make a bold statement to Congress that people will not put up with a stolen election. Then there's this interesting testimony from four vets who are at the Capitol. Quote, these families attending the rally moved to the inner barricades. It wasn't aggressive, just peaceful. This is where the cops came in and used overwhelming force. We were on the line with the barricade, and out comes the metal batons, and they start hitting Trump supporters as hard as they possibly could. They were hitting old men and old women. I couldn't believe that there were young kids walking in this crowd, but the police were targeting these kids and hitting them with batons across the head. It was vicious. This action by police brought the crowd to a fevered pitch. where they were demanding that they be treated respectfully, but instead the police began either pepper spraying or tear gassing the crowd. There was one very obese cop in particular. He was shooting people on purpose in the eye with pellet pepper packs, and that was causing horrible injuries. I saw an older woman bleeding profusely. It looked like her eye came out of her socket. So we see this happening and realize what's about to happen. These vicious cops are about to hurt all these people and then likely arrest all of us, and there's no way to retreat without being trampled. I turned to the guys around me and yell out, "Mama didn't raise no bitch." And so we threw down the barricade and rushed the Capitol. We had them on the run, and we knew they couldn't stop us. So how do you expect combat veterans to behave? How did Americans react in 1776? You probably didn't hear these stories on the nightly news about the overreaction of the police. The story, the narrative, could have been totally framed in that way by the media. Then everyone in America would be talking about police brutality. But the way the media framed the story, it's all about undemocratic violence. That's how most people now see it. And yet remember, the vast majority of the people at the rally, 99.999999% of all Trump supporters, didn't even go near the barricades. Even Alex Jones, yes, Mr. Conspiracy Provocateur himself with his InfoWars, was outside the Capitol on a bullhorn shouting that this is a setup by the left and Antifa. Do not go into the Capitol. Instead, gather around the back of the Capitol for a rally. And you can go on the InfoWar website and look at that footage. You know, this Capitol break-in event is being called a false flag operation. A false flag operation is an operation that disguises the actual source of responsibility and pins the blame on the other party. You know, as expected, the political left is characterizing this event in such a way to disparage and to discredit the conservative right and bury evidence of election fraud. So don't be deceived by the propaganda. We've seen it before. The rally wasn't as bad as the left makes it out to be. So we expect the left to create a false narrative for political purposes. But what has been really discouraging is that some pundits on the right, even some Christian commentators, are jumping on the leftist bandwagon and believe in this narrative formulated by the left, how the left is depicting these protests. Probably because they just watch CNN or the evening news and they believe that the left's outrage is genuine. Here's an example. There is a well-known Christian political commentator who gives a daily briefing. He's the former president of the SBC. He's now the president of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. He dedicated his Thursday program to characterizing the rally as an attack on liberty, a tragedy, a horror, that the president was lighting a fuse. And I'm going to stick my neck out on the line here and say I believe that he was jumping to conclusions out of misinformation. The narrative of the left fooled him, like sometimes it fools all of us. Rather than seeing the rally as a good and necessary sign that good people want to defend our Constitution, our values, our country, he went along with the media's depiction, disparaging the president and the whole event just because of a few rabble-rousers, many of whom were plants by the left. I mean, we all make mistakes. Even I make mistakes. I'm just giving an alternative opinion based on everything I know. And besides, I was at the rally. This commentator wasn't. My goal for this week's YouTube is to provide for the Christian community a more correct way of viewing the rally on January the 6th, and to reject the false narrative of the media, the narrative that they're pounding into everyone every single day. Here are some quotes from this Christian commentator which kind of shows that he's starting off with an ideological bias against the president. And a priori opinion that there was no fraud in the election. And that's why he makes the following statements. Quote, millions voted for Trump, but millions more voted for Biden. So there we see he doesn't believe that Democrat operatives fixed this election. Is he sure of that? He said that Trump incited the demonstrators to support his assertion that he actually won the election. Well, sure, that's the whole point of the rally. And there's nothing wrong with that if there was actual fraud. But Trump did not tell the people at the rally to do violence or to break into the Capitol, by implication or even by innuendo. Trump is right in saying that his speech was totally appropriate. So here's one president who knows how to stand up to the false depiction of the left. Most people would have caved in to this fake outrage, but the president didn't. And this Christian commentator said that since Trump claimed he would never concede, that must mean he would not accept a loss no matter what. But it's kind of obvious that Trump was saying, like anyone else would say, he would not concede given the evidence of fraud. He never meant that he would never concede if the evidence proved otherwise. But if you have a bias, you hear what you want to hear. Then this commentator said that what he saw yesterday was an attack on liberty. How's that? Was 1776 and the violence there an attack on liberty? Was the Civil War an attack on liberty? Cannot an uprising ever support liberty? If you stand for liberty, then it would be the right thing to do to never concede if there was actual election fraud. If this election was actually stolen, then President Trump and his supporters will go down in history as American heroes for standing up and believing the evidence when everyone else was going along with political correctness and with peace over principle. And then this commentator claimed that since Trump was losing his defenders, this is what he had to do to intimidate Congress and to stop the constitutional process. That Trump sought to delegitimize the entire nation in the election process, that Trump was subverting the Constitution. And then this commentator made the broad brush claim that the problem was that Trump supporters weren't supporting Trump on the basis of principle, but on a cult of personality. And he said the proof of this was that supporters were waving flags with Trump's name on it. Come on, those are just the 2020 campaign banners. Anyone who has talked with Trump voters knows. They weren't at the rally for Trump or his personality. They were there because it's a fact that the left cheats, that the left is pro-abortion, pro-LGBTQ, opposed to religious freedom, that they have an agenda to turn America into a communist state, because Washington, D.C. has become a corrupt swamp. Here's another example of Christian leaders going along with the left's depiction of the rally. On CBN, Christian Broadcasting Network, they interviewed the dean of Wheaton College and the executive director of the Billy Graham Center. He depicted the situation as Christians having fallen prey to conspiracy theories that has led to violence and death. The National Association of Evangelicals put out a statement. The protests demonstrate a disturbing conflation of Christianity and a nationalist ideology that is far from the ways of Jesus. Yesterday's event, which included the erection of a noose, are another painful reminder of racism that plagues our country. The mob at the Capitol was provoked by leaders, including President Trump, who have employed lies and conspiracy theories for political gain. This is a complete misunderstanding of the rally, even the break-in. It wasn't about racism. It wasn't about political gain. It wasn't about lies and conspiracy theories. It was about preserving the Constitution and the American Republic. The leadership of the National Association of Evangelicals is interpreting the situation the same way as the Democrats. But this is not surprising because the NAE has been drifting toward the left theologically for quite a few years. So this is really a fascinating aspect of this event, how Christians are divided based on their different associations and influences. I'm giving my take on this. What do you think? And why do you think there are divided opinions on this? My gut feeling is that this is to be expected. There's always a group that doesn't wake up to the crisis until later. A group that doesn't believe in the corruption when it's first revealed. I heard an example the other day. I might have already shared this. But if you were living in the 1960s and you were told that the Roman Catholic diocese in Boston was a cabal of homosexuals and they were abusing hundreds of little boys, would you have believed it? Back in the 1960s, probably not. The claim would have sounded too far-fetched. Nobody would be doing such a thing, not even the Roman Catholic Church, even with all of their theological problems. But it was actually true. Naivety towards sin on the part of the general public has happened again and again in many events throughout history. So, among other reasons, one of the big reasons some Christian groups disparage the rally and Trump supporters is that they're naive. They're insulated in their own ivory towers. They don't believe that the Democrats are snakes who would cheat. Yet remember, these are the people that support the killing of babies in the womb. Do you realize who these people are? Rudy Giuliani and his experience as a prosecutor in New York City has a better understanding of what is going on behind the scenes in politics than these naive evangelicals. And rather than just jumping on the media bandwagon, we all need to seriously consider the evidence of election fraud. The evidence is substantial. It has yet to be disproven by the Democrats. Notice evangelicals like David Kupelian. He's convinced that this election was stolen. Because here's a man that has done extensive research into the corruption on the left. Kupelian has written the books, The Marketing of Evil and How Evil Works. And all evangelicals need to look at the evidence of what the Democrat Party has done in the past. And they need to open their eyes. And when the evidence comes out that this election was stolen, these critics are going to have to eat crow. And I want to hear apologies from all of these Christian leaders and from these Republican leaders. And I want them to never trust evil again. So by way of conclusion, I would like for us to consider how often the Bible addresses this fake bias and outrage on the part of those who are ignorant and opposed to God's truth. Even those people in the middle who are deceived by the fake outrage of the world. And we could start in Genesis chapter 4, the fake outrage of Cain. How dare God not accept my offering? God is punishing me unjustly. I mean, Cain would probably say in our day, God is undermining democracy. But a more clear example would be the fake outrage of Ahab against the prophet Elijah. 1 Kings chapter 18, verse 17. When Ahab meets Elijah, he calls Elijah the troubler of Israel. But Elijah says back to him, I have not troubled Israel, but you and your father's house, because you have forsaken the commandments of the Lord, and you have followed the Baals. And Ahab says back to Elijah, yeah, but I said you were the troubler first, no tagbacks. Well, not really. But notice the debate could only be settled by seeing who was following the law of God. Who was following the immorality of Baal versus who was following the morality of Jehovah God. And all the blame falls on the immoral party. There are many other Old Testament examples of fake outrage Remember the Jeremiah case? Jeremiah chapter 38. The leaders of the temple accused Jeremiah of discouraging the people and plotting to destroy Jerusalem. That Jeremiah's message was a horrible insurrectionist dog whistle, when in fact, Jeremiah, by his counsel, was seeking to save the nation. But the chief priest was sure Jeremiah was the problem. And so whatever Jeremiah said was to be blamed. Jeremiah was arrested and silenced. He lost his Twitter account. And this controversy with all the false prophets versus the true prophets was all about who actually had the word of the Lord, who had the moral authority versus who was just feigning fake righteousness and fake outrage. In the book of Nehemiah, the liberals, the anti-Zionist crowd, were making the false claim that Nehemiah was trying to make himself a king. He was just in it for the power. He only wanted an office for himself. And Nehemiah responded, "Such things as you are saying have not been done, but you are inventing them in your own mind. You're just trying to frighten the people. And you're trying to delegitimize me." And this is what the ungodly do. Or how about Isaiah 29:16? Isaiah says to his opponents, "You turn things around." The ancient version of the modern, they put a spin on it. Now in the New Testament, we see the fake outrage of the Sanhedrin against Stephen. Stephen was telling them the truth about their corruption, and they became indignant. "How dare this nobody, Stephen, criticize us? How dare you criticize the swamp?" They saw Stephen as the problem, and they stoned him to death. In Acts chapter 14, verse 2, "But the Jews who disbelieved stirred up the minds of the Gentiles and embittered them against the brethren." Notice how these unbelievers changed the narrative to paint the Christians as the troublemakers. Then in the city of Ephesus, the Christians and Christian truth was threatening those who had the money and the power. And so the ungodly created in the whole city fake outrage against the disciples and dragged them into the stadium, completely mischaracterizing the work of the Christians. Then remember when Paul visited Jerusalem. There was all sorts of fake outrage against Paul's evangelistic work. The people yelled. They stirred up the dust by beating their cloaks on the ground so that Paul could not be seen or heard. That was the ancient version of deplatforming and suspending your account. And then, of course, all of the fake outrage of the Sanhedrin against Christ. They accused Jesus of blasphemy. Matthew 26:65. Then the high priest tore his robes. Oh, he was seriously outraged. And said, "He has blasphemed. What further need do we have of a witness? Behold, you have now heard the blasphemy." So talk about fake bias outrage. So in our day, who has the fake outrage and who's speaking the truth? I'll let you answer that question. But I will say this. I am so thankful for the 200,000 to 300,000 people that showed up at that rally. Because if we ever get to the place that even the possibility of a fraudulent election doesn't stir the people up to take their grievance to Washington, we are in big trouble. The fact that so many people were willing to make the sacrifice, stand up for our Constitution, travel from California, Texas, Michigan, was just an encouraging sight. Back in Russia in 1917, when the communist Bolsheviks took over the government by intrigue, if they only had 300,000 patriots in Russia to rally against that move, history would be much different. I have an Armenian man in my church who shared with me that 2 years ago, the citizens of Armenia rose up against their corrupt prime minister with 11 days of protest, and he was forced out of office. It was mostly peaceful, but there was some minimal violence, tear gas, arrests. But these people saved their nation from tyranny. You don't want to ever get to a place where the people don't challenge the absolute authority of the state. Kings and politicians need to be reminded that their power is not absolute. The state is to be under God. And any law that does not agree with the law of God is no law at all. So in that sense, I believe the Stop the Steal rally was a good thing for our republic. The break-ins were not the essence of the rally. Our elected leaders needed to know that the people will not put up with election fraud. This rally was a shot over the bow. Don't believe the media spin that this rally was bad for America or bad for conservative Christians. I'm out of time. I wanted to add some history about Christian civil disobedience and when it's right to protest the government. The Christians in the Reformation thought they had their theology concerning civil disobedience all nailed down. And then the St. Bartholomew Day massacre took place in 1572 when the French government and the people started attacking and killing the Protestant French Huguenots. Then all of a sudden, opinions and theology about resisting government began to change. And it was by that resistance that the Protestants were able to overthrow the tyranny of the Holy Roman Empire. I'll just have to discuss all that in a future program. You know, what the Bible says about the Christian duty to fight corruption in government. But until then, keep the faith. Stand firm. Don't be conformed to this world. Be outraged over the things that outrage God. And may Jesus Christ reign.